doing? Zach Kowski.
Adam Henry.
Bobby Jones.
Jeff Jarrett.
Joe Siddle.
TJ Laramie. And
Holy Mackinac, you're listening to Wind City Sports.
Yo, what's good? My name is Jake DeMore, and thank you for downloading or streaming this episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast. Wind City Sports is Winger's only local sports radio program on CJAM 99.1 FM and Windsor's only local sports podcast. New episodes of the radio show air on CJAM every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. live, and replays are on Fridays at 4:30 for your drive home. You can hear every episode of the Wind City Sports Podcast, including new episodes, which drop every Thursday wherever podcasts are found, including iTunes and Spotify. You can also find it on our website at windcitysports.com or on the brand new Border City Podcast Network, a new Windsor local podcast network. That's there at bordercitynetwork.com. We also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. We'll talk all about that at the end of the show, as we normally do, but today is Thursday, April 4th, 2019, and it's episode 139 of Wind City Sports. Man, March really did fly by, and we're kicking April off with a pretty awesome interview. As I've mentioned before, I have been a little bit overwhelmed with the podcast, and not a bad way, just finally I've mastered the Wind City Sports Podcast, at least I feel, and I have a ton of interviews in the bank ready for you guys for the next couple weeks, and a lot of times when I do them, I hold on to them for a couple weeks, but this past weekend, and even just the day before when we were setting this up, I knew that this was going to be a good one, and that I might want to get it out a little bit earlier than normal, not for any particular reason, just kind of trying to spread out the themes, different sports and stuff that we have coming up. But this week on Wind City Sports, we're talking to a former pro mixed martial artist and a pro wrestler from right here in Windsor, Ontario. He's also a freestyle wrestling champion. He was in the early days of the UFC. His name, Dangerous Dave Benito. He has some wealth of knowledge and cool stories and stuff about the UFC and basically their inception, how he got onto the events, his experience with them. His thoughts on MMA now and on the UFC now. Talks a little bit about wrestling, because obviously he had a big wrestling background, and much more. I mean, this is a pretty stellar conversation, and we talk about how he got into pro wrestling. It's another cool story there. So anyone interested in martial arts or wrestling or anything of that sort, you're gonna love this interview. But before we get into that, we're going to jump into that in just a few moments. But I got to tell you about my friends over at SeatGiant.ca. SeatGiant is a marketplace that connects buyers and sellers all around North America. If you live in the big city or in a small town, SeatGiant has an inventory to any big concert, theater show, sporting event, family event, and lots more. SeatGiant is another third-party ticket sales site, kind of like StubHub, but better because it is in all Canadian dollars, unlike the competition. Prices aren't inflated by the time you get to the checkout page. The price displayed is the price you pay. So when you're loading up tickets, you know, let's say they're actually, we had some $23 tickets to the Detroit Red Wings game the other day. Load those up, pay for them $23 each. Not with the exchange rate, which is killing us right now across the border. You know, those would probably come out to about 40 bucks each almost. So that doesn't happen. And also it has less fees than any other site. SeatGiant has tickets for any game or concert across the border in Detroit, but also has local events on their site. Usually, although they're out of season now, the Spitfires are done and the Express are done. But I have seen tickets for both the Windsor Spitfires and Windsor Express on SeatGiant.ca. And here's the icing on the cake. You can now use code WINCITY for 5% off your order now. That's code WINCITY, WINCITY, for 5% off your order from SeatGiant.ca. And there's also SeatGiant.com for you American folk across the border. So check it out. But now, without further ado, we're going to get into the interview with Dangerous Dave Benito. Here
right,
we go.
So right now on the phone, we got a former pro mixed martial artist known for his time in the early days of the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship. He's also a freestyle wrestling champion. If I'm not mistaken, a pro wrestler at one point with BCW and maybe some other places. Dangerous yeah. Dave Benito. Welcome to Wind City Sports, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Drake. Appreciate it.
Yeah, this is going to be cool, man. Like, probably the only guy that I know actually from Windsor that was actually in the UFC at all. Let's start, you know, growing up here. Like, what area did you grow up in? What schools did you go to and stuff like that?
I was born in Windsor, raised in River Kennard. Okay. Lived there my whole life. In fact, family still lives there. And my mom passed away a few years ago, but my dad still lives in the same house me and my three brothers grew up in. Went to Sandwich Secondary in LaSalle. And from there, I went to University of Simon Fraser in British Columbia.
So you got some traveling. You got to go out to BC and see the west side of Canada, too, eh?
Yeah, I went out there on a wrestling and a academic scholarship back in the 80s.
Okay, so that now everything's going to kind of start to come together, because I was going to ask, you know, when you started getting into any kind of martial arts, because I'm pretty sure it was, like, wrestling growing up and stuff like that, right?
It was, yeah. You know, look, whether you consider wrestling a mixed martial art, I guess that's a subject of some debate, but
yeah.
in grade nine, I went out for the high school wrestling team, and I quit. Actually, I got, you know, I was a big kid for my age, and most of the bigger guys in the team were seniors, and I kind of got shit kicked every day, and I'm like, man, this sort of sucks. And then the next year, grade 10, one of the senior guys came into the lunchroom, Todd Taranjo. I remember the conversation like it was yesterday. He says, hey, the coach, Mr. Champco, he's looking for a 180-pounder, and he doesn't know why you quit last year, and he thinks you should come out and give it another shot. And, you know, there wasn't much going on in River Kennard. The thing is, though, I didn't have a ride home after school every day, but I went out to practice again and stuck with it, and that was kind of the beginning of my wrestling career.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to consider it a martial art, like you were saying, but I would group it into that same category. It's obviously a combat sport, right? It certainly helped you with getting into fighting and stuff. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. I am biased, but I've been around, and the last 25 years, I guess, since the UFC has been in North America, I think wrestling, freestyle wrestling, is considered or discussed in the same circles as any other MMA, and I would say that it's still quite relevant and fairly effective in the fight game.
All right, look at Daniel Cormier. Like, it's just a pure example right there.
Right, Daniel Cormier. Look at Randy Couture. Like, still relevant, well into his, you know, probably mid-40s. I get out on the mats every once in a while at Extreme Couture here in Toronto, where I'm living now, and, you know, I get to roll with some guys who are either in the UFC or connected to the UFC or in the UFC fighter reality series when it was going on. I don't know if it still is. I don't follow it as much as I used to. But, you know, I'm old, I'm out of shape, but I wouldn't say that I'm irrelevant.
Oh, for sure, dude. I know, like, my dad's still training jiu-jitsu, so he's going to be 60 in a year, so, you know, you could still keep doing that stuff forever. And I'm pretty sure you had some judo background, maybe you're doing jiu-jitsu with the guys at Extreme Couture now, right?
I started learning judo and jiu-jitsu. Judo, after my wrestling career officially kind of ended in 88, 89, there's a guy from Windsor, the Windsor area, Joey Demarchuk. You know, and Joe was an excellent wrestler internationally at the world level, and he had retired from wrestling, and he reached out to me around 89, 90. He says, hey, Dave, you know, you got to get into judo, because Joe had a heavy judo background. And I did a few years and had some, I guess, success in that sport as well. Awesome. And then when the UFC came along and, I guess, mid-90s, this, you know, jiu-jitsu was sort of like, what's this jiu-jitsu all about? There was this guy, Hoist Gracie, who was beating everybody, and it was all sort of cloaked in secrecy. And so, of course, I had to try to figure out what jiu-jitsu was all about. And I went out to Salt Lake City, Utah, where one of the Gracie brothers' star pupils sort of lived and taught, guy named Pedro Sauer, and I studied under him for several years back in the mid-90s. So, while I don't do a lot of jiu-jitsu today, If I got to pull something out of the hat, or you know, I'm in some situations, I still got a playbook I can fall back on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's all there, right?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy?
So, you know, hey, listen, Drake. You get older, but it's not like you can erase. I mean, the first 30 years, 36, 35, I guess I officially stopped competing. But, you know, for like a good solid 20, 25 years of competing, you just don't erase that. It just doesn't go away. Your body may, your father time may kick the shit out of you a little bit. But you don't forget what it's all about and having done all those things. It just doesn't get erased.
Yeah, it's like muscle memory and instinct and stuff, you know, you just do
That's it.
That's it. It's like a lot of times, even when I'm rolling and stuff, people are like, how'd you do that or whatever? I'm like, I don't know. I just fucking did it. You don't think about stuff, you know, it just happens. But obviously you had that wrestling background. Do you enjoy grappling? Like, is that like an aspect of martial arts that you really would be an advocate for?
Yeah. It's still sort of it's still near and dear to my heart. It's kind of been my secret mistress my entire life. I could never walk away from it. And when I need to level set or get my mind right, or, you know, with craziness of living in Toronto and working, you know, marriage and children and all the responsibilities, the quickest way to level set for me is to get an hour or so on the wrestling mat.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things, like anything. Like, a lot of people think once they kind of grow up, get older, you kind of get out of whatever, playing hockey or doing wrestling, whatever it could be. But I love, you know, being able to do that thing for the rest of your life. And it's just life skills that you're learning too, right?
That's it. You got to stay connected. I mean, it's a...
Yeah. Even if you're not doing it consistently, just dropping in, like you're saying.
That's it. And it's a little bit sad. I mean, I've seen generations from high school to university competing to professional fighting to, you know, going to, I watched a lot of guys fall off to the wayside for all kinds of reasons. And one of the reasons is because they're like, well, I'm old now and I shouldn't be doing this. And I was always confused by that. I'm like, what, who says, like, yeah, where did that rule come from? You know,
it should be the opposite, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm old, but I'm still going to do it.
Yeah. You got to stay connected, man.
Absolutely, dude. I love that. Well, you know, we'll talk some more wrestling because obviously, like, I'm a grappler myself too. I like all that stuff. It's kind of pushed under the carpet sometimes. You know, people are just focusing on punching people in the head and stuff. But speaking of which, let's fast forward a little bit. 1995, I think you're about 27 years old, and UFC 5 is about to happen. Like, how did you get onto this event? Because before, was it mostly wrestling, and this is like a new kind of thing? So, like, let's bring in some, you know, a mix of all different disciplines. Like, how did you get into UFC, really?
Yeah, well, I owe it to a guy named Mike Hillman, or Mike Jaworski, and I'm not quite sure what last name he's going by, what alias he's going by now.
Okay.
But anyways, there's this fellow named Mike Hillman, and he owned the Fitness Depot at the time, and I used to go in there once in a blue moon to buy equipment. And I'd been back in Windsor for a year or two after Simon Fraser, after the 88 Olympics and the Olympic trials. I came back to Windsor, and I was in a store one day, and like 94, 93, and he said, you know, have you heard of this thing called the UFC? And I'm like, no. He said, well, there's this guy named Hoyce Gracie, and he's like kicking ass. And I said, well, what's it about? And he showed me this video, and all back then the videos were like, hey, I got this video of this underground fight. Like, it was, you know, everybody was talking about it, and like, it was kind of like blood sport,
yeah, black market.
So anyways, he showed me the video. I remember watching it, and I said, yeah, man, this is just wrestling and punching. And obviously this Hoyce Gracie guy has a different martial art that's working for him. But like, I mean, I understood grappling, and I did, out of interest, take some boxing, and I had worked in a number of nightclubs. So I understood what fighting was about.
Yeah, he had some experience.
And I said, hey, I go, Mike, I said, why are you asking me? He says, well, I want to get you into this. He said, look, I said, I'm trying to chuckle. I said, yeah. I'm like, fuck off. He said, look, I'm going to put together a promotional video. If you give me permission, let's do this video. I'm going to submit it, and I'm going to reach out to this guy named Mark Davies, who would co-own the UFC back then with Hoyce Gracie's brother, Horian Gracie. I said, listen, if you can, if you think you can get me into this, I'm down. I'm totally down to do it. I think I could be effective and relevant and not make an ass of myself. And so we did, and we put together a video, and he submitted it to Art Davies, and about, I don't know, 2-3 months later, I got this call at 9 o'clock at night in where I was living, and I answered the phone, and it was Art Davies. He said, Dave Benito, and he said, Dave Benito, Art Davy here. Says, I need a Canadian alternate for UFC 5 in April. He said, are you my man? And I said, yeah. I said, of course I am. He said, good, I'll send you the contract, and you're in the eight-man, you're in the four-man alternate bracket. He says, you'll fight for who the number one alternate is before the main tournament of eight guys. And if somebody gets hurt, you're in. I said, hey, I'm your man. So I packed up my stuff a few days later, and I went out to Simon Fraser, where I went to school with a wrestling scholarship, and I trained up until the fight, which I believe was like April 7th or so. Mm-hmm. And anyways, that's sort of how I got into it. Owe it all to Mike Hillman.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. Yeah, man. Like, that doesn't happen like that now, you know?
No, absolutely not. So no, absolutely like, not. It's a whole different set of circumstances.
So to hear those stories is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask about the tournament and the event, obviously, because I'm reading here, it says that you replaced a guy, John Hess, who broke his hand, so I guess that was kind of established before you went in there. I didn't know if, like, because I'm looking here, you see beating the fucking wheels off this Asbel Cancio guy.
Oh, so. funny story. So the four-man alternate bracket, I went out and fought Asbel Cancio. And there was this other guy that was pairing off, Guy Mesger, and I forget who he was fighting. Anyway, Guy Mesger won his fight, and I beat Asbel Cancio fairly convincingly. And then Horian Gracie comes up. Like, I had just come out of the cage, and I was back in the dressing room, and Horian Gracie comes up and says, hey, John Hess is injured. Guy Mesger doesn't want to fight you for the number one alternate spot. You're in 5 minutes, line up, you're going out. And I said, well, who am I fighting? And he said, you're fighting a guy named Todd Medina. I said, okay, let's go. So we got in line and we walked out, and I was in the main tournament. It was just like that. I had about 5 minutes notice.
See, I knew that there was some story behind this.
man.
Like, I didn't know if like, they seen that. And again, this guy broke his hand, so they're like, get Benito in there. He just had a good fight. Like, see if he's down. Or if they just, like, made you. I didn't know. It could have been either or, you know?
Yeah. No, it was supposed to be the number one alternate that goes in, and that's kind of how it shook out.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Again, this is crazy UFC stories. So you beat, Tom Medina. I'm looking at the bracket basically right now, beat him by strikes in 2 minutes, and then you go on to fight Dan Severn. What do you remember about being in the cage, looking across and seeing Dan Severn and his fucking mustache looking at you? You guys are about to throw down.
Oh yeah, like a really grown up version of Freddie Mercury. I'm joking, like we always tease Dan a little bit about that. He had the Freddie Mercury mustache. But no, so after I beat Todd Medina, I was supposed to fight Dan Severn, and I knew who Dan Severn was. I had wrestled him 5 or 6 years earlier when I was a teenage wrestler, and he was wrestling, I think, or still coaching at Arizona State. So I knew, and everybody knew who Dan Severn was in the wrestling world. I knew I had my hands full. But one thing I thought I had over Dan Severn was I thought I had a little more athletic ability, and I thought I had a little bit better striking than Dan Severn did. Dan Severn was never known for striking ability. Didn't want to get on the ground, though. He'd ball you to death. So the goal was to, you know, go in there and just go at him hard and just start out. He wasn't going to out-wrestle me or manhandle me, and I just wanted to strike, how my striking game, how far it would take me. So, and that probably happened about 40 minutes after my fight with Todd Medina. So he'd have been my third fight. Mm-hmm. in about an hour and a half, I guess. My hands were kind of mushy at that point, too. Like, they were the size of bowling balls, and they were quite swollen and painful. Yeah.
Well, for the people listening, like, this is back in the bare knuckle days. Like, there's gloves, no protection at all, basically.
Yeah, the only two rules back then, Drake, were you couldn't bite, you couldn't gouge the eyes out.
Yep.
And everything else was fair game. There were no rules, rounds, weight classes, no gloves. It was just a free-for-all. It was blood sport.
Absolutely, man. I just watched a video, actually, of some people covering UFC 9 in Detroit, which also featured you. We'll get into that in a minute. And then it had a video of, like, the rules meeting, and I'm not sure who was talking, but they said, I suggest wearing the groin protection because you can get hit in the groin. They're going to hit you in the groin, so wear that groin protection. Just like,
that's it, man.
Like, wow. Like,
yeah.
Just like, you know, real. Just so you know, we can kick you in the ball, so if you want to wear a cup, that's your choice, man. Like, like, but so basically, and I didn't know this at all. So this is UFC 9 in Detroit. You were supposed to fight. Someone like ratted you out for a broken hand or something. You were trying to get through to the fight, and just like the day before, they pulled you or something, right?
Yeah. Little story here. So I was supposed to fight Gary Goodridge.
That's right.
Another Canadian cat from Barrie. Gary and I are good friends, have been for a long time. But anyway, I was supposed to fight Gary, and 1 week into the training camp, I went up to Salt Lake, and I was studying jits out there, and over at Brigham Young University in Provo, which is about a half hour away, was Mark Schultz. Mark Schultz, again, if anybody who's wrestled, know, like, Mark Schultz is the cream of the cream. He's an Olympic gold medalist, multiple-time U.S. national champion, and he was kind of the focus of the recent Hollywood film a few years ago called Foxcatcher. Anyway, I'm wrestling with Mark Schultz, and we're scrambling, we're scrimmaging, and he shoots in on a leg attack, and I post, and my fourth metacarpal snaps. So I'm like, shit, this ain't no good. So we go into the university campus health facility. They put me under ultrasound, X-rays. 20 minutes later, they come out, they're like, Dave, your hand's broke. Like, it's a good, clean break. And I'm like, shit. So I called back home, and at the time, I was a paramedic, and there was this doctor, Curtis Fedorik, working out at Grace Hospital. And I called Curtis, and I said, hey, Dr. Fedorik, I just broke my hand, and I got a fight in 5 weeks. I said, can you put some screws in it or something? And he said, listen, I'll get you hooked up with the surgeon. Come on back. And he says, I'll get you into surgery, like, in a few days. Just get back here, and we'll put some screws in it. So I did. I flew back, and they put four or five screws in my hand. And then I called up my old wrestling coach from Simon Fraser, and I said, hey, I got a broken hand with some screws in it. I said, but I got to train for 5 weeks. I need the physio room. They got to tape it every day. He says, come on out here. We'll get you trained. So I did. I flew out there, trained for 5 weeks with a broken hand, went to the fight. Went through the medical. The doctor missed it on the medical. And then I'm in the pre-fight interviews, you know, Jeff Blatnick, who was a color commentator. I'm sitting there, and Jeff says, Jesus Christ, Dave, just, what happened to your hand? I said, oh, I broke it 5 weeks ago. He says, well, what are you doing? I said, Gary's not a ground guy. He's not a grappler. I said, I'm just going to take him down, and I'm going to ground and pound. It says, I see it as a pretty straightforward fight. And he says, Christ, that looks horrible, your hand. I said, let's move on, you know. So finish the interview, and then about an hour later, Bob Marwitz, the owner of SEG Entertainment that owned the UFC at the time, comes to me and said, hey, look, this isn't kosher. You're not going to go out and fight with a broken hand. Like, he says, we have enough heat for this being a blood sport as it is. He says, I can't let you fight. He goes, he says, now we got to find a substitute. And I was standing there with Mark Schultz. And I said, well, why don't you get Mark to fight? And they said, well, Mark, would you fight? Like, you're a gold, Olympic gold medalist. It'd be great for the sport. It'd be a real. And he said, yeah, man, I'll fight. He says, let's go negotiate a contract. So on the spot, they negotiated a contract with Mark Schultz. And Mark Schultz stepped in and fought Gary Goodridge. And I was out. Just like that.
Wow. Again, crazy how these things came to be in the fucking 90s in the UFC, man.
Yeah, that's it.
Did you
and
watch?
You know, Gary, and like Mark, I mean, you know, when you think about it, Mark Schultz hadn't, well, he was the coach at Brigham Young and he was Mark Schultz. I mean, but he walked in without any formal training. And, you know, if anybody remembers seeing the fight, he pretty much handled, I'm being polite because I'm friends with Gary, but he pretty much handled.
That's incredible. Did you see the fight? Did you go and watch? Or?
Oh, well, yeah, I was his corner guy.
Okay. So yeah. Actually, I need you to clear up a little bit of a history here for me. So
yeah.
We have Scott DeMore, my cousin. He says he was going to, or he walked out with you. He cornered you for a fight. Was that supposed to be for UFC 9? Was it at another event, or is there no truth?
Geez, I'm not sure. I certainly have done stuff with Scott DeMore, and Scott's a great guy too. He's a pretty funny guy.
Yeah,
I've done stuff with him on the pro wrestling side. Did a bit of that for a while, and I'm thinking maybe it's related to that. I can't recall whether Scott walked out with me or cornered me on any official fight.
Okay,
you'd have to refresh my memory on
that. Yeah, well, that's the problem, because apparently we're trying to find it and can't find it. So I was thinking maybe it was supposed to be at UFC 9, but since you got pulled that, it just never went down.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. For sure it wasn't UFC 9, because I was supposed to fight, and my corner guy was Mark Schultz and Lonnie Foster, who was my jits coach from Salt Lake. And so... as a result of what happened because of my hand, then it was just, then me and Lonnie became the corner guys, and Mark Schultz stepped in my place.
Gotcha. That was just what we were trying to figure out, pretty much.
See what
Scott was telling us. But, you know, you were there for, like, pretty much the beginning stages of the UFC. It was a brand new thing. And you said, like, you don't really keep up with it now. I'm sure it's just, like, is it, like, really different to you? Is it, like, night and day?
It is. I don't want to sound like some old has been, and you know, the days when you used to walk 5 miles to school and 10 feet of snow, but it's everybody's the same, everybody's got the same style with a little bit of a nuance here and there. The rules, the weight classes, the gloves, I don't know. It's called the UFC, and that's probably the only thing that hasn't changed is the name. Everything else is pretty much different.
Oh, it's evolved so much.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't know. Look, there's a huge difference between knowing you're going out there. If you're not main card or a title fight, you're going to fight 3 5-minute rounds. Like, that's a huge difference than going out there thinking this fight could go on forever and we're not wearing any gloves. Like, it's, you know, it's just different.
Yeah, totally different aspect, right? I just, you know, you said you like to voice your opinion, so I didn't know if you wanted to touch upon, like, the current mixed martial arts scene, you know?
Well, yeah. Open that door. I actually strongly believe that we don't necessarily see the greatest fighters in the UFC. We see the most entertaining fighters. And even on the UFC reality series, I don't know where that's at or if they're running seasons anymore. But I had buddies that had tried out for that, who were clearly superior in talent and ability in the tryouts leading up to it, and were booted in the final cut simply because, and the stated admitted purpose why they were cut over the other guy was, well, you're not as entertaining and we can't market you. And so it was never, it's never about who's the best, it's about who's the most entertaining, and that's what they're selling.
Yeah.
And so I'd see some of those guys, they too would then go into the UFC once after the reality series. And, you know, it's a little bit of appearance versus reality. To be sure, there are some tough guys in the UFC, and a lot of the Eastern Europeans that I see invading the UFC now are very talented, hardcore, hard-nosed guys. But there is some fluff in there. And I shake my head sometimes, and I just think, yeah, that's the part of America that they'll just never let go of. It's just the entertainment part.
Yeah, true. It is a big entertainment aspect of it now. And, you know, like I'm a martial artist myself. I respect it so much. But sometimes I look at it and I see a little pro wrestling in there with the promos and the, you know, talking shit and stuff like that. So I want, totally. You know what I mean? Like, that's where it all came from. Like, Muhammad Ali got it from Gorgeous George, and fucking Conor McGregor got it from Ric Flair. You know. I want to get into the wrestling stuff in a bit, but before that, so, you know, you do the UFC tournament, you did the Ultimate Fighter 1995, whatever event there. You did some fights in Japan and Brazil, I seen. But then you come back to UFC 97. I want to hear a little bit about Japan and Brazil if you want to touch upon that. But you come back in 97 and you beat Carlson Gracie's boy there, Carlos Barreto.
Carlos Barreto.
So I want to know, like, so even like in the previous tournament, like, they never really called you back. Like I don't understand that. Was there any reasoning for it? And even again, beating a highly touted guy like Carlos, you don't get called back. I'm just wondering why.
So, yeah, Carlos, my last fight in the UFC was Carlos Barreto. He was a Carlson Gracie guy, undefeated. And I knew I had my hands full. I mean, pretty much anybody I had lost to, Carlos had beaten. And so, I looked forward to that fight. And I went away, trained my ass off. Came back, beat Carlson in a unanimous decision, and if, you know, quite a bit of time has passed, but I remember fairly clearly that Mark Kerr, it was a four-man tournament, and Mark Kerr had beaten sort of a nobody in his first match, and it lasted about 20 seconds or a minute, I don't know. And I had this 15-minute overtime, so in UFC 15, which is what that fight was, they'd introduced time limits, and I had gone into overtime and ended up being a 15-minute match, and it was tough. Carlos was a tough cat, and everything I had left in the octagon in that fight. And after that fight, I mean, I was just physically exhausted. And so I said to Bob Meyerowitz, who was still the owner at the time, I said, listen, I'm not going to bullshit you and suggest that I'm going to fake an injury, like I've got a broken hand or got a broken toenail, or like what a lot of guys used to do. They used to just feign injury to not go on to the next bout. I was just physically exhausted, and I really felt that I had the tools and the ability to beat Mark Kerr, but I didn't want to do it after a 15-minute grueling match against Carlos Barreto. And so I said, look, I'm exhausted. I'm not fighting in the next fight. And so he said, anyway, there wasn't much of a discussion at the time, but after that UFC, Bob Meyerowitz called my manager at the time, Nick Marentet, Windsor guy, and said, hey, I want my money back from Benito. I want the appearance fee back. I don't want to hear from that guy again. Like, he's like, and you know, look, I got a $5,000 appearance fee to go to UFC 15, and they wanted the fucking $5,000 back because I wouldn't throw myself into the final match. And so, you know, that's exactly what it was. From then on, and then Bob Meyerowitz, Semaphore Entertainment Group, they sold out to some other company not long after that. And I guess there was a bit of a black mark since then. After that, I never fought in the UFC.
I gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah, just based on the situation, like, I thought it was just like a one-off fight, you know, so I'm like, why would he beat one of these highly touted guys? And I thought maybe if they were like bitter about it, you know, you beaten them or something.
Well, there was a little bit of bitterness too, but it wasn't from the UFC per se.
Of course.
It was from the Carlson Gracie camp. And you know, if you've been around Jits guys, Drake, there's a ton of politics. And especially back then when Carlson Gracie and the Gracie family, there was so much politics, and in fact, after I beat Carlos Barreto, my Jits trainer in Salt Lake, Pedro Sauer, they called Pedro Sauer and said, hey, what are you doing teaching an American guy, a Canadian, a North American guy, the secrets of Jits? Now look, he went and beat Carlos, and it's not good for the brand, and it's not good for business. So I wasn't really welcome to go back and train anymore in Salt Lake after that either.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's fucking politics.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's unfortunate you even see it at the level here, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
just between clubs and stuff. I'm sure it's crazy out in the GTA. Imagine all the clubs that are around there, right?
Oh, listen, it happens everywhere. A buddy of mine, Steve Sims, who's an incredible Jets player, he just went to the Abu Dhabi trials in California and lost the most blatantly he got the most blatant robbery I've ever seen in a jiu-jitsu match. He lost in the final to a guy that just happened to have the right guy standing in his corner. I don't know if he was from the Enzo Gracie camp, or he was from one of those camps, and it was the worst robbery I've ever seen, man. And I'm like, hey, welcome to politics.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt in the politics, but just even the refereeing being shit in jits, man.
Totally.
Oh, it can be terrible sometimes. But just to kind of reflect more about, you know, fighting. Like I said, you went around to Japan, to Brazil. Before deciding to hang him up, why did you decide to retire? Did you want to get into just a steady job or something? Or?
I was getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And I think 97 or 98, so I was 30. I had a few knee surgeries, nothing too crazy, but I was, you know, injuries, knee surgeries. And I was a paramedic in the city of Windsor at the time, and I was on leave while I was training and going away and doing all these fights. And so the thought of retiring from fighting and going back to be a paramedic, those public servants do a great job, but it didn't necessarily appeal to me to go back and do that. So I took an LSAT course and started studying for the LSAT, and I applied to law school, and God willing, I got in.
Yeah, wow.
So met my wife in law school, and I moved to Toronto, met my wife in law school, and the rest is kind of history.
Interesting. You've done a lot in your life, man, and one last thing we got to talk about is the pro wrestling. How'd you get into that? That's got to be.
I was Dan Severn. I was training with Dan. So after Dan Severn and I fought, Dan Severn's Coldwater, Michigan, about an hour and a half from where I lived in River Kennard, mm-hmm. and said, "Hey, come on out, be my training partner, Dave. Like, we can train with each other." So I was making weekly trips to Dan Severn's place, and I'm in his office, and New Japan Wrestling calls and says, "Hey, we need you to fight. We need you to do a pro gig in this Osaka tournament going on." And he says, "I can't. I'm already booked." He says, "But listen, I got Dave Benito standing right next to me here." They go, "Look," and he says, "Hang on." He says, "Dave, what are you doing in 3-4 days? Can you go to Japan and do this gig?" And I said, I'm like, fuck, I've never done pro wrestling. I don't know what the hell to do. He says, "Dad, just I'll teach you the basics." He says, "Can you go?" He says, you got a passport? And I said, "Yeah." And he says, "Hey, Dave Benito can do it." And they said, "Oh, great." And they booked it right on the spot. And a few days later, I flew to Japan, and that was my first gig.
Oh, like, again, something that would never happen now.
Yeah, and then so that was that. And then about 6 months later, I get a call from Don Fry. And Don Fry is doing gigs in Japan, too, as part of this team with a guy named Brian Johnson, also a UFC veteran. And Don Fry says, "Hey, Dave, look, we're putting together, we need a third guy for this Club 245. I'm like, "What's Club 245? He says, "Oh, that's the penal code in the criminal code for California. It's the penal section for assault and bodily harm. We're going to call ourselves Club 245. And he says, "Look, can you be the third guy in the team?" And I'm like, "Sure." He says, "Well, here, fly out to Minnesota where our training camp is, and let's get our gig down." So we did. And from there on in, I did another 4 or 5 tours in Japan as part of this Club 245 team with Don Fry and Brian Johnson.
That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it was a good role, man. It was, I tell you, it was a lot of craziness, a lot of fun, without the pressure of, you know, real winning, losing, fighting.
Yeah, yeah.
Money was good. It was... a lot of memories there, I'll tell you.
Oh, that's cool, dude. A lot of people made that transition, you know, going from martial arts over to wrestling, really. And the reason that I pretty much found you, like, obviously I'm familiar with your UFC career, but I was reading some BCW stuff, and it said they brought in some UFC alumni, like Geza Kalman used to wrestle all the time, and your name was on there. So I was like, oh, I didn't know that he did the wrestling, too. But all I could find was New Japan stuff. So you did some stuff with BCW and with Scott, too, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah. Did some stuff there, And there was another guy, Antonio Inoki, who's legendary in Japan.
Yeah,
and,
might have heard of him.
Right? yeah, he's like legendary. And so Antonio Inoki, I met with Antonio Inoki and Don Fry. We went out for dinner. And Antonio Inoki is like, I want to put together this new league called the Universal Fighting Organization. And he said, you know, this we want to try and have a branch that's called the UFO. And so, yeah, that was what we, Brian Johnson, Don Fry, and I, we participated in the UFO. It was around for 3-4 years, and then it sort of diminished. And then the rest of the stuff was just with New Japan. And, of course, WCW back then in New Japan, they traded all their talent. And then I think the WCW went by the way of the dinosaur.
Mm-hmm. Man, right place, right time.
That's the motto of
your life, eh?
Yeah, well, listen, but that's the motto of many a person's life.
Yeah, true.
You just got to be prepared to embrace it.
Very true. Were you, like, even a wrestling fan? Or, were you just sitting there like, yeah, sure, I'll do it?
It was never something I contemplated.
Yeah.
It was not something that I'm like, hey, that's all I'm going to do. It just sort of, it fell into my lap, to be honest with you. I was quite fortunate.
That's very cool. Again, a lot of those things did happen that way for you, and you're able to do a lot in your life. But now it looks like you're a personal trainer out in Toronto, and maybe you're doing some other, you got a little renovation company going on, too. I tried to email you there.
I'm the general counsel for a sort of premium luxury fitness chain called Movati Athletic.
All right.
Yeah, and have been for about 4 or 5 years now.
Okay, so you're able to, go ahead.
Yeah, we're actually opening up a club in Windsor, probably the fall of next year.
Right on. So you're able to use your schooling and kind of bring it into the fitness world too, right?
Yeah, look, I'm certainly here in a legal capacity.
Yeah.
But it's an environment that is familiar to me and very comfortable to me.
Exactly.
It's a great place to work. We have a great product, and it's just being around the fitness industry is a very, very positive sort of thing to wake up to every morning.
Absolutely, dude. Man,
yeah.
This has been awesome. I thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And hopefully, if you come down to the Windsor opening, we'll link up, and it'd be great to meet you.
Yeah, you bet. Looking forward to it, Drake.
Thank you so much, man.
Yeah, okay. Take care, man.
Cheers.
All right, there we have it. Dangerous Dave Beneteau on the Wind City Sports Podcast. My name is Drake DeMore, host as always. Got to thank Dave again for taking the time to do that. I don't want to say it was short notice, but it just kind of rolled quickly. I should give him a shout out actually last Friday by the time this airs, and talked to him last Saturday, or Sunday. Sunday, I got up early, went to church, and then, you know, was able to talk to him Sunday afternoon on the phone at home. And it was really cool to talk to, you know, a former UFC fighter who was in the early days of UFC, and there was also a pro wrestler, and from Windsor, Ontario. You know, I had known the legend of Dave Beneteau, but never really knew much about him until, like I said, I was doing some research on BCW, bored at work, and I came across his name on a list of UFC veteran or UFC alumni that had partaken in some BCW events. So I thought, that's the guy from Windsor. Let's reach out and see where he is now. The only thing I could find is a direct email was a Dave Beneteau that was running a renovations company in the GTA, which I knew this Dave was. I'm pretty sure it's not the same Dave. And luckily, the email bounced, and I was able to find his email at Movati Athletics. So it'll be cool to see when that place opens up in Windsor what they have to offer. A little bit of backstory for you. When I was talking about the story with my cousin Scott DeMore, he had told my brother that he cornered someone for UFC, I believe it was UFC 8, they said. Watched the footage and did not see him, so we're trying to figure out what he's talking about, you know. I'm surprised in Dave's memory it was very clear, you know, considering what he does or did for a living, as well as Scott, back in the days of chair shots, may have, you know, sent his memory for a little voyage there. So I don't know. We're still trying to figure out that mystery. If you have anything for us, me and my brother and my buddy Angelo, let us know. I think it actually could have been Dan Severn that he said he cornered. He was also friends with him. But leading up to this, I asked my brother what I should ask Beneteau, and he said ask him about Scott and UFC 8. So I thought maybe it was supposed to be UFC 9, like we had talked about there. But I guess the mystery still goes on. But now, without further ado, let's break down some local sports news to wrap up this podcast for episode 139 of Wind City Sports. We'll start with our Windsor Spitfires, who officially ended their playoffs on Thursday, a week ago today, at the WFCU Center as they lost Game 4 of the opening round to the London Knights. Thursday's final was a score of 5-2. Tyler Engel and Connor Corcoran picked up their last goals of the season on Thursday. The Spits also announced their year-end team awards, with Cole Perbeau taking home a lot of recognition. You can see the list of award winners on WindCitySports.com. And until we get to the draft, which is actually going to be very soon, we might not have a lot of Spits news, except for some alumni who are still in the playoffs, including Mikey DiPietro. The Windsor Express basketball team also wrapped up their 2018-19 season as of Sunday. Their final two games were against the London Lightning this week. Friday night was their last home game of the season at the WSU, where they fell to the Lightning 121-119. They went back to London on Sunday to wrap up the regular season, where they lost 126-114 to London. The Express failed to pick up a win in their last eight games, with their last win being back on March 6 against Moncton. It was a terrible way to finish the season, which had a lot of highs and lows. They were able to turn around back in December, January, February, but it all fell apart at the end, and it did not work out in their favor, obviously. With a record of 17-23, the Express missed the playoffs for the first time in the team's eight-year history. I can only assume some major changes may be coming to the team by next season. By that, I hope that we don't see a lot of the coaching staff leave or anything, but something needs to be done to turn this team around, obviously. I mean, there's no question about that. It's pretty obvious. The University of Windsor Lancers baseball team is keeping things rolling. They're actually undefeated right now in the spring season, as they picked up some big wins this weekend with the final scores of 4-3 and 4-1. The Lancers swept the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor on Friday. They took on Michigan again on Monday and scored another win, this time a lot closer, with a final score of 9-8. Next up, they have a doubleheader with Bowling Green University in Ohio on Saturday. They will welcome the Western Michigan University to the Lebro Field out in Amherstburg on Saturday the 20th for their first home game of the season. The Windsor Rogues Rugby Club has also announced their schedule for the 2019 season. All of their games will be played on Saturdays, home games assuming still at the AKO Park on Bernard and Alice. It all kicks off with the Rose City International Tournament on May 4th and 5th. It's an annual event, and this might be the biggest tournament to date. 9 teams so far, including the Windsor Rogues. The tournament will feature a few teams from Ontario, including Chatham, Sarnia, and Toronto, as well as some teams from Michigan and even a team from Cleveland. So more details to follow as it unfolds, or you can check out their website. Really quickly, got to give a shout out to a local guy and a former Windsor Spitfire, Mitch Dunning, who made his NHL refereeing debut on Thursday, a week ago today, in Ottawa, as the Senators took on the Florida Panthers. So there were some other Windsor area boys in the building that night, with Bob Bugner and Aaron Ekblad on Florida. So congrats to him. He went from a Spitz defenseman to an OHL ref, and now he made it to the show in the NHL. It's pretty cool. And finally, the Windsor Clippers also opened up their exhibition play. Windsor Clippers Junior B lacrosse team, if you're unfamiliar. They had 3 games with the Six Nations Spring Showcase Tournament. This past weekend, the Clippers started off with a 16-0 win over the Wilmot Rebels. It's pretty rare to see a shutout in lacrosse. Where was I? And they beat the St. Catharines Spartans 5-2 before falling 9-7 to the host team Six Nation Rebels. The Clippers, who actually still have 10 players away at school across North America, open the Junior B season on April 18th. The schedule has been announced on their website, windsorclippers.com. And that's actually 2 weeks from today, April 18th, at Forest Glade Arena, as they welcome in the Six Nations Rebels. But it looks like that's going to be all this week on Wind City Sports. My name is Drake DeMore, and we are here with brand new episodes of the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, and wherever podcasts are found. But more importantly, and more specifically, right on WindCitySports.com and on the brand new Border City Podcast Network at BorderCityNetwork.com, featuring all of the best Windsor-based podcasts. We also have the Wind City Sports Radio Show, which airs every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. live on CJAM 99.1 FM in Windsor and Detroit. And you can catch replays on Fridays at 4:30 or on CJAM.ca. We'll be back here with a brand new episode next week. And before I forget, we also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram account. So give us a like, follow, subscribe, whatever it may be, at WindCity_sports if you can't find us. And you can also follow me at Drake Damore on on Twitter and Instagram if for whatever godly reason that interests you. But give me a follow. Why not? Anyway, we'll be back here next week with some more awesome interviews. We have a bunch in the bank, a bunch lined up for us in the next month or so. So going into May, we'll be steady bringing in these sick interviews. So until next week, smell you later.